Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Now we get the chance to talk to the Chicago White Sox closer. Liam Hendricks joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or at apford.com. Liam, how's it going?
Good. How are you guys?
We're good. It's always fun to talk to, of course, a huge signing, but it's even more fun with your accent. This makes for wonderful radio, Liam. I'm sorry to have to make that generalization off the bat, but it is always fun to talk to somebody with a cool accent, too. Welcome to Chicago. Welcome to spring training, and we're happy to talk to you.
Thank you very much for having me. I mean, it's always nice. I mean, you say that now, but just wait until everyone calls in and be like, I have no idea what he said. Can I get a transcript? Then it's going to be a little bit more of a headache, but yes.
No, I liked hearing you screaming at yourself during drills. And some pitch was maybe not exactly located where you wanted, and it was obvious because you sound like me on the driving range. You don't hold it in when you're with your self criticism.
Yeah, no, I mean if I'm going to be mad at myself, I might as well let everyone else know that I'm mad at myself because I'm not trying to hide anything. I'm not trying to trick anybody, fool anybody. It's just if I mess up, I mess up, and everybody's going to know about it.
I laughed at one of the articles talking about you when you were in Oakland from the NBC affiliate there that broadcast the games, NBC Sports Bay Area, because they talked about that. They said, you know, you can be the affable presence in the clubhouse who I think reportedly can drink up to 6 cups of Starbucks and then go out there on the mound and just be a beast.
Well, it's currently 8:24 here and I'm on my 4th cup. So, I mean, 6 is putting it lightly, but, yeah, I mean, my wife likes to call it white line fever. I'm a different person on the field than I am off the field. It's off the field, I like to be a little bit more kind of happy-go-lucky, enjoying life. And on the field, I want to pretty much go out there and make sure and embarrass the hitters' families every time.
How do you sleep? Do you have a tough time coming down from 6 cups of coffee and actually getting enough REM sleep to be healthy?
No, usually I sleep on my stomach. It's just the way I do it. But no, I have no issue sleeping. I actually, every night after the game, night game, whatever, I'll grab a cup of coffee on the way home. It actually helps me sleep. So I'm one of those weird people that can pretty much drink it. I think this is where I get most of my water intake, so it's probably not healthy. But it's definitely more enjoyable.
I love the energy. Your story is really compelling, and I'm glad you brought up your wife, Christy, because I was intrigued hearing that she was on the Zoom calls with you when you were meeting with teams, trying to figure out who you wanted to play for this season.
Yeah, I mean, that was always going to be something that we make a decision as a family, because at the end of the day, she's going to be in a strange city just as much as I am, but I get to go to the field. She is going to be at the house. And so I'm making sure that she was comfortable wherever we went. And also, she heads up a lot of the philanthropic efforts that we do. It's a joint effort, so making sure she was on the call, making sure that she could get connected with someone within the organization that could help do our things that we focus on off the field. And so far, the White Sox have been fantastic. That we've already done a few things now with making sure we get some meals out to some first responders and some essential workers. And yeah, they've been great with that. But yeah, that's all Christy. She does a lot of the day to day stuff with all that, and making sure that she was comfortable wherever we go was a huge deal to me.
I know pitching has become so scientific now, with so much at your disposal to understand your spin rate, to see everything slowed down with cameras, that seam shifted wake and everything moving through the air and all the physics involved. And I went through some of the data on your pitches. What happened between 2014 and 2015 when, at least from Fangraph's data, you gained 3.4 miles per hour on your fastball? It was like flipping a switch. What happened?
I went to the bullpen. I went to the bullpen, and after the season, I went to the Dominican and really worked on guys at that there. So I changed my throwing program a little bit. But to be honest, I mean, you look at the progression in 2015. The first couple months, I was still anywhere from 90 to 94. I mean, I remember the first time where I had like an entire month where I didn't throw a pitch below 90. That was super exciting to me. But that was like, maybe June of 2015. So you see the progression of that year. I mean, I started the year at 91 to 93, ended the year closer to 96, 97, and it's just, I think I got a little bit more comfortable in my role, and also long toss. I started long tossing every single day with my throwing partner at the time, which is Mark Lowe, and hearing, like, just seeing guys like that. I mean, he went from the tops and turves of throwing at the low 90s to the mid-90s, and then that year he was throwing upper 90s, hitting 100 consistently.
I love a good comeback story, and yours is an excellent one. After being DFA'd, what was the self-examination you went through and the questions you asked yourself to get to this point where you are now with the biggest free agent signing in baseball?
Which DFA are you talking about? Because it's been five.
Fair enough. Whichever one that I think just gave you the most pause.
The biggest one for me was the one where I cleared. Because the first four, I went from the Twins to the Cubs, Cubs to the Orioles, Orioles to the Blue Jays, and then I got traded to the Royals, and then I went Royals back to the Blue Jays after being DFA'd again. So the biggest one for me was the last one, the one with Oakland where I cleared. Because I was in AAA. I wasn't sure what my career trajectory was going to look like. I wasn't sure if this was going to be the last year, what was going to happen. So I went down and said, look, if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out on my terms. I'm not going to be told by any organization to dictate the way I warm up, the way I prepare for anything. I'm going to go out and do me. And I went in long toss, which I felt like I had done in the past, the couple years that I was throwing harder, the couple years I had more success. And what I did growing up in Australia was I threw all the time. So if I didn't feel good, I just kept throwing until it felt good. And that was a program that had seemed to work for me. And a lot of long toss and a lot of I used a lot of different resources. So I used an actual tarot card reader called Ruby, and she was able to kind of get a couple things into my head that realized that I was thinking very negatively upon every situation, where it was always like, well, why did this happen to me? Not how do I get past this or anything like that. I took a positive mindset into absolutely everything, and now it's you don't think I can do this? Watch me. And that's my kind of game plan coming into every season.
Where did you find Ruby the tarot reader?
So that would be my wife again. She's going to be a common theme in everything that has come successfully in my life.
Aww.
But she was on Instagram, and Sarah Hyland, who plays from Modern Family. So she had posted about Ruby. Chrissy had just DM'd her and be like, look, she's a celebrity tarot card reader. Like, she's going to be too busy, but Ruby got back to her straight away. And they built a friendship to the point where Thanksgiving before that, we went to Disney with Ruby. We had her and her husband over, and so we have built that relationship to the point where pretty much we have a text going just as friends now. It's more of a friendship rather than a business proposition, which is fantastic.
Can you give me an example of maybe one of the positive things that you told yourself that maybe would have been negative previously?
So in previous years, I would, like, especially going into the into an at-bat, it would be, okay, like, this guy is really good at this, so I need to make sure I throw a perfect pitch, and I need to make sure that this hitter can do this well. Now it's, I don't care what he does well, what does he suck at, and that's what I'm going to approach. And it's just those little, like, tweaks where it's, you almost give yourself more room for error by not focusing on what they're good at, because that gives you a very minimal place to kind of put a pitch rather than, okay, where do I have the most room for error? Let's attack that part. And then it's kind of completely changed everything. And now I look at it and I'm on the mound now and I don't care who's in the box. I'm better than them, and let me prove it.
The self-talk and just that visualization and the realization for pitchers on the mound is so crucial. You've talked about it. Your teammate Lucas Giolito talks about his visualization and the process he goes through. And he's also a comeback story. What do you think of what he's done to get to his point now that you're his teammate?
I mean, obviously you've seen what he was like doing. He was a first rounder for a reason, but then it kind of got to the point where he was, I think, and he'll tell you this, he was overly concerned with certain numbers coming in. So he didn't focus on anything else. He was just throwing as hard as he possibly could and not really focusing on everything else. And I mean, you talk to him about Ethan and what he was able to do with his career is just shortening that arm up and getting a little bit more deception in there, which means that you don't have to try and throw everything as hard as you possibly can, because you can finagle the pitch around, you can manipulate it a little bit more, and you're going to have more success with being able to tunnel the pitch rather than just throwing as hard as you can. But I'm a big proponent of, it's called Fig Jam. Mm-hmm. It is, I'm not going to say the first word, but frick, I'm good, just ask me. And it's something that I've kind of realized that, like, I don't care what anybody else says about me. I know that whatever they say negatively about me, I'm going to use that as fuel. And whatever they say positive about me, I'm going to use that as fuel as well to make sure I don't disappoint. Because, I mean, I'll tell you as much as anything, I can get complacent when it's consistently positive. I'm like, okay, I'm set, I'm all right. And I never want to get complacent. That's why, like, even with everything I do, I'm not considered the closer right now. I'm trying to make this team as first and foremost. And then I'm going to try and move to the point where I can make sure that I absolutely earn the closer's role on this team. And nothing's going to be given to me. I've got to make sure I go out there and earn absolutely everything.
So you say the closer's role. There are some interesting forces at work right here. One is the understanding of leverage moments in modern baseball, where sometimes the game's decided with two on and two out in the fifth. And just because the ninth inning is the last inning, it may not be where the high leverage moments come. Countervailing that would be the fact that your manager, Tony La Russa, is maybe the creator of the ninth inning closer. He was significant in making that a role. How are these things going to balance, and how do you expect to be used?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've told them, like, I'm ready for any situation whatsoever. It doesn't matter what inning, doesn't matter what anything like that. But, I mean, anybody who's thrown the ninth inning will tell you that those last three outs, no matter the leverage situation, no matter what's going on, the last three outs are some of the hardest outs in baseball to get. Then it shows. I mean, you see how many times it's like a guy will come in with runners on and everything like that. They're able to get out of it, but then all of a sudden they get that opportunity to get into the ninth inning, and it just changes. It's whether it's a mindset thing, whether it's the importance of making sure that you're the last line of defense or whatever it is. It's I'm up for anything. Like, if they want to throw me in the fifth inning with a couple guys on, I'm all for it. I'll be out there and I'll be ready to go. And if I'm in the ninth inning, I'm in the ninth inning. And the good thing is, with this bullpen, you can pretty much chop and change every single person there, whether it be the long guy, whether it be the middle relievers, whether it be the high-leverage guys, whether it be the high-leverage lefties. I mean, we've got enough guys in this bullpen, as it projects out now, that you can pretty much chop and change absolutely everybody. I mean, who knows, by the end of the season, depending on how everyone else is doing, I could end up being the long guy because these guys are doing way better than I am. Who knows?
Well, and I understand the bullpen philosophy for the teams that you talked to was a huge part of your interview process with them and the potential to win a World Series. What were your takeaways from the White Sox in those areas?
Obviously, having Tony was a big thing for me. I've dealt with Tony with our animal rescue efforts in the Bay Area with his rescue foundation out there. So that was a thing for me. But I knew Tony just because of, like, what he'd done for Dennis Eckersley back with the A's when he kind of almost invented the closer's role. So obviously he is a proponent of that. And talking with guys, it's like, look, they just want to get everybody better. There's no if they're going to let me kind of do my own thing, if this is something that I believe in, that's something that has worked for me in the past. They're not trying to reinvent the wheel with every player. They're trying to get whatever they can best out of them. But if a guy is, like, a little bit more along the lines of me, where I've gotten into that routine where I don't need to kind of go out and make sure I'm throwing weights around in the gym or doing anything like that, it's a pretty open scheme, which is good for me. I wanted to deal with Ethan, who's a little bit more of the new age, mixed with Tony, which is more of the old school, which is a vibe that I think is important these days. I think too many people got into the analytics too much, and it kind of detracted from the way of that guys in the game, where there's certain things where the numbers all line up and this is what's going to happen, but you have that gut feeling that no, let's that gut feeling is what has gotten a lot of teams rings in the past. It has not always been analytics.
We're talking with Liam Hendricks, the White Sox closer, here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Before we let you go, I have a little game that I want to play with you. And this is because for many, many years, two decades plus of whatever show that I've done, we've had a non-sports segment where we do odd news and stories, often involving animals. And one of the themes of this segment and its various iterations has been people being killed or nearly killed by animals in Australia. And just because there's so many things there that can kill you. And I've got a list of the animals that have been part of stories that we've done on these airwaves. And I'll name and you just tell me if you or anybody you know has had any kind of interaction, positively or negatively, with any of the following. I will start with great white shark.
Not that I know of, but there's been a couple in my area. Like, I live on the beach, on the coast in Perth, so there's been some attacks down there, but no one that I know personally, because You guys only hear about the attacks. You never hear about the ones that just don't attack.
Fair. Well,
okay, next up, funnel web spider.
Not personally, but I mean, these are the stories that you grow up with. I mean, it's the funnel web, the huntsmans, they're not really, like, they'll scare you a little bit, but they're pretty much harmless if you stay out of their way.
Okay, any crocodile issues?
No crocodile issues. I mean, that's a little bit more inland when it's a little swampier rather than just straight up ocean.
All right, the next two are straight up ocean. Blue-ringed octopus.
No, that was a lot bigger of an issue when you're in school, when you thought they were going to be a big issue. But they turned out they're just, you don't really run into them too often. You'll get stung by a regular jellyfish and then panic when you're about 8, but other than that, you're fine.
Okay, that's the next one was box jellyfish.
No, box is one, like, I don't know anyone personally that's had anything to do with that, but that's one of the ones that you'd really have to watch out for because they're clear, because they have they tend to be a little bit more around where we are, but no, I haven't heard anybody who's had any issues personally, but that's one of the ones you actually do have to watch out for.
The last two are more terrestrial. There was a story about a bird called a cassowary that has a claw like a velociraptor that it disemboweled somebody. Any cassowary related issues?
No, but if you ever Google a cassowary, it's like a turkey crossed with an emu that is just pissed off at the world.
That could be a nickname for you between the white lines then, perhaps. And the last one that we have, it could be either the eastern or the western brown snake.
No, as kids, you'll run around a little bit and you'll see some snakes running around, but most of them are harmless. You got to be careful of certain ones, obviously. But, the only snake story I've ever heard was a guy who I've played with in the past who had an issue in Arizona during spring training one year, and that was about it. But other than that, I haven't, there's not too many people, like, all this stuff in Australia gets blown out of proportion because apparently every American over there goes there and gets attacked by something.
Fair.
Maybe that just means that, maybe the Americans need to watch out a little bit more than the Australians because Aussie guys, like, we haven't run into too many issues other than the random kangaroo jumping down a road.
That's still pretty entertaining. You've got to appreciate at least the respect for the wildlife. We know that
it's like with anything that is dangerous or semi-dangerous or has the opinion of being dangerous. It's you got to respect everything about it, and you give the land its due respect, it's going to respect you back.
Liam, thanks so much for taking the time to do this. Continued good health, and go get them.
All right, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.